the film with three brains. It's 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 the film with three brains.
Oh my god, you guys are freaks.
Welcome to the film with three brains. I'm Sam in San Francisco.
Sean from Chicago.
And Cohen from Maplewood, New Jersey.
Sweet. Today we're reviewing the movie Babe from 1995. It is a live-action, somewhat animation film about an orphaned piglet that ends up on a farm where there are no other pigs and is raised by sheepdogs, essentially, and wants to become a sheepdog himself, or a sheep pig. And I'd say the style of this movie is somewhere between A Christmas Story and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's narration, cartoony, but also enough live action and silliness too. I don't know. What do you guys think?
That's a very apt description. I would also say that it's a little dark in the first, in the beginning. I was surprised it was rated G actually.
Oh, I thought that was interesting because the darkest spot in this movie is the first 5 minutes. So you're like, you start out feeling lousy, and then it gets better from there on. I mean, there's a couple little things later, but I definitely agree. It starts out like you're like, ooh, this is spooky, but then it wins you over.
Yeah, it reminded me very much of Okja, if you've seen that Netflix movie, from the Korean director whose name I forgot, who did Snowpiercer and The Host. Anyway, Okja is as depressing a movie as I have ever seen in my entire life. I would have been just fine never seeing it, but the ending is dark, man. It's so dark. It's sort of like the beginning of Babe times 1,000. Anyway. Yay!
Yeah. No. What was your description? It's A Christmas Story meets what?
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yeah. Okay.
It does have an aesthetic similar to a Burton movie. Mm-hmm. I would say. I had always thought George Miller directed this, the director of all the Mad Max movies. But he directed the sequel. He co-wrote this and produced it. And then the director was Chris Noonan, who I'd never heard of. But I had always thought, isn't it odd that the guy who made Mad Max made Babe? But I mean, it is odd because then he went and made Babe too. So whatever. Anyway, what'd you guys think?
I'm dying to hear what you thought because you were the one who hadn't seen this movie.
Like, I had not. That is true. This is the first time. 2 days ago was the first time I ever saw it. I mean, it was fine.
There were no punches thrown, so I know it's not your cup of tea.
Although the Hugo Weaving dog did attack his his sort of wife,
his spouse, yep,
yeah,
and the boss,
and the boss, yeah, like dang. So that was almost fun. That was like throwing a punch. I don't know. It was fine. I would say it was about what I expected. It had a bit more. There was a bit more drama than I expected, I suppose. A bit more adult themes going on. I was surprised by. I thought it was going to be much more frivolous and lighthearted, which some of it was. I don't know. I mean, it's fine. I'd be fine never seeing it again.
Yeah, I'm not going to glowing review.
I'm not going to buy it or anything, but it was fairly wholesome. I mean, the pig was cute as hell, and I liked the friggin' duck, Ferdinand.
Yeah, the duck was good.
Yeah, one thing I was kind of surprised by was the what year, Sam, did this come out?
1995.
So pre-Matrix.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Hugo Weaving hadn't done a ton of stuff. He certainly wasn't a household name. So that makes sense, actually, because for some reason I was thinking this came out after The Matrix.
Yeah, before all the Lord of the Rings, I believe, as well.
Right, yeah. So he was definitely not a well-known actor at that time. So that makes sense because no one else is either, other than James Cromwell. And even then, I guess...
His voice actually had a lot of emotion, not emotion, but a range to it, more than I'm used to, I guess, in most of his roles.
You talking about James Cromwell?
No, I'm talking about Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving, like, yeah.
Yeah, just him going, you know, all the barking stuff he shouts and...
Yeah.
He's like, enough! Ah! You know, he just sounded like there's just more to his performance than I'm used to.
Right.
But yeah, James Cromwell. I still can't think of him as anything other than Mr. Skolnick. Father of the nerd in Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh yeah. Oh geez, I didn't put that together at all. I for some reason I always think of him as the drunk engineer or whatever the hell he was in Star Trek First Contact, who he builds the first something ship or I don't remember. I always think of him as that and. What's the other thing? I don't know. There's something else. He's in a ton of stuff. I don't know why I can't.
He's in a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But before this, I don't know. What is? Where the hell? Oh, there he is. So
while you're looking that up, Sean, you've seen this movie a couple times. What do you think of it?
Right. This is number two. I saw it when. When did you see it? It definitely was around the time it came out on video. Again, probably with some family members, and I was razzing you about this pick, so I guess I should somewhat apologize for that because I did kind of enjoy it, and I think that I mean like. Yeah, I'm not gonna sugarcoat my thoughts on it. But I mean, I think I have to admit that it's a likable, entertaining kind of story. And yeah, it does have a little bit of some twists and stuff and things that kind of keep you guessing. And like just the way it's and the set design and the you know the colors and the paint getting all over the place with you know duck prints and. Pig prints and stuff like that. You know, like those are nice little touches that kind of fall in between a normal kids movie and sort of a real, like serious, not serious film, but like a real film that we'd enjoy watching normally.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the reason I picked this movie was because, you know, I've seen Secret Life of Pets or Secret Life of Pests, maybe I should call it. And, I'm just not impressed with some, especially with the sequels for recent animation movies. And I was like, you know what? There's got to be a cute movie out there that's from the time area we're looking at that holds up well and is done solidly that little kids would enjoy. You know that you could say, hey, your kids can watch this and it's an innocent and still good. Movie and mm-hmm. I think it holds up to that. I mean it's yeah, I mean if it's obviously not something that someone who's, you know, 45 years old and single is going to be putting on every Saturday night when they have their friends over the way we would Predator, but
big party. Yeah. And then we'll do Pig in the City.
Right. So, but I think it's a fun movie. It's cute and it's different than other things. And it, even though it has the Disney feel of, you know, the pig being victorious in the end, that I shouldn't say feel like that an almost Disney ending. It doesn't have the Disney feel. Like it doesn't feel like you're it's going by the beats or anything like that. It's just, you know, you're watching it happen, but it's not hitting you over the head with the Little Mermaid type formula or something like that. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. I think it's a good movie. And it's probably the only movie we're going to review at least anytime soon, my guess is, that was nominated for, 7 Academy Awards?
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
This was nominated for Best Picture.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
This was nominated. This seven Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, and it won Best Visual Effects for that year. I don't. You know, I got to look up see what the competitors were. Yeah,
I will say the effects were pretty good. You know, if you watch the opening credits, you see a pretty wide swath of different, like Jim Henson's Muppet Factory is credited, and then there's, you know, various effects companies and digital companies and everything. So it was a mix, you know, sort of the Peter Jackson approach, you know, whatever works. And it's hard to spot the seams in it, you know. Mm-hmm. All the talking and everything was all really well done.
The talking was good. I found the syncing, the overdubs a little bit off-putting, because I'm sure they had to do a ton of it. I mean, just like the human actors and then their lines, and maybe it's just the version that I watched, but they didn't. It wasn't smooth. It felt a little disjointed, almost fairy tale-ish. Anyone else think that, or was it like, nah, it's fine?
To me, it seemed fine. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I
wasn't streaming it though. So
yeah, I downloaded it and watched it on demand, but and I was like, oh, is it me or? And there was only a couple times where it really stood out, and it was like the husband, you know, the son-in-law, like his lines, and because then I was like, I got distracted with, oh, his accent's a little off, and then I'm like, well, where is this? And then I started thinking about, yeah, Hugo Weaving, and it's filmed in Australia, and there's really no country with it. It's supposed to be everywhere, kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's beautiful wherever it is, but mm-hmm. I think, yeah, more than just the accents, just the way that their lips are moving, and the wife. The wife was, her lines. I don't know. I'm nitpicking.
But. No. You know, you're right. There was something about the wife. I couldn't really put my finger on it. There's just something off-putting in it, and there's something. Yeah, you're right. There was something about it, like almost like they ADR'd everything for her afterwards, and it just wasn't quite right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's not easy to do, but
no, I mean, not at all.
It's a normal thing to do in movie making, right?
Yeah, totally. Almost to the point where it almost seemed like maybe it was a different actress overdubbing.
Mm-hmm. Could be. You know, it's Cromwell's voice, but
yeah, totally.
Beyond that, I don't know.
So I was looking up. I always want to say Oliver Cromwell, James Cromwell's. You know, his filmography, and before Babe, he had been in a lot of stuff, but always supporting. You know, the smaller roles, nothing flashy, nothing you really remember. It wasn't until a couple years after Babe, I think, when he did L.A. Confidential, that he sort of made his stamp, you know, and from then on started doing far more memorable roles, including then Babe 2 was after that as well.
So he was nominated for an Oscar for his performance in Babe.
Wow.
Best supporting actor.
I mean, he was good. He's good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a good actor. I like him. I didn't like all the like rouge on his cheeks.
Yeah.
It was a little strange. But I guess they're kind of going for a, you know, sort of a storybook aesthetic. So it makes sense in that regard. Interesting little tiny tidbit. He had a role in The Babe years earlier.
Okay.
With, about Babe Ruth.
John Goodman is The Babe.
Yeah, yeah. And then our listeners will have no idea what I'm talking about, but he was also in Explorers, Sam, which I had no idea.
Oh. Sorry, just a reflexive, repulsive response there.
good listeners, there was some talk of reviewing Explorers at some point, and Sam was quick to remind me that it's just awful. So maybe we won't.
It may not stop us, nor necessarily.
Yeah, it won't stop us. We'll get to it. Eventually.
So I'm sure you're all looking forward to that.
We'll make it episode 101.
It is a very young Ethan Hawke for fans of him, but other than that,
Phoenix and I don't know who the third kid is, but River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, tangenting.
So there's a bit of technology that at first seemed like, okay, it's just an anachronism to have a fax machine, but I really liked how important it was at the end that he had to get that application in by fax.
Right.
He was like, I don't know. I punch a button and it goes through.
That was the one thing moment about this movie that really dates it, because I was like, fax machine? Does a kid know what a fax machine is anymore?
I love that. I don't know why I love that.
Okay, I don't know. I feel like you have to.
So she gets it for Christmas. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I feel like you have to be at least 20 years old now to know what a fax machine is. I mean, they explain it in the movie, but it's like, it's just so weird. It was such a random thing that I had no memory of from when I first saw this movie. It was like, fax machine.
Yeah, first you have to explain what a landline is, and then you can get to the fax machine.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know about you guys, but my nitpicky thing is that I had PTSD from listening to little squeaky rats that help narrate between the scenes because they remind me of Velvet, Simon, and Theodore. And the it's just like,
I kept picturing minions. I thought they sounded like minions.
Yeah, they are. You're right. They're a little minion-y too.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any rhyme or reason to the songs that they were singing? Like Blue Moon, and then they did Toreador, you know, from Carmen, I guess. But, I mean, there was like a... I mean, they were just going, like, whatever sounded funny, I think, was, let's do that, let's sing that. But maybe there's certain things that fit more than I realized.
Maybe it was a bit of foreshadowing somehow. I don't know. I don't remember any of the songs they sang.
One of the voices that I recognized was the cat when she finally talks.
Ah, yes.
Do you know who it is?
I know exactly who it is.
Yeah, go ahead.
Who was it?
Well, she's the voice of Martin Prince, the nerd in Bart Simpson's class. And she's also the voice of the purple-haired twins, Sherry and Terry, in The Simpsons, and the German exchange student, Uter. Her name's Russi Taylor, and she recently died, but she was Minnie Mouse in a zillion things.
Oh, geez. Uh-huh. I thought it was Myrtle...
That's who my wife thought it was.
Yeah,
from when we were watching it.
Harry Potter.
She said, "Is that that sounds just like
Moaning Myrtle?
Is that what it is?"
That's what I thought.
Yeah, my wife thought that too. Didn't
trust IMDb then.
Put them together, but.
Well, I gotta go check. I mean, I didn't see that as part of our list. From a voice standpoint, I did it, but maybe that's what I was thinking of. I was like, I gotta look up this lady. I know this. I recognize this cat. And yeah,
I didn't know you were so hip. I recognize this cat. Oh yeah, man.
I gotta find it.
Well, if you want to look that up, I will talk about one or two things that. I don't want to say irked me, but I noticed one that I didn't put together until I was thinking about it later, which was they're not actually sheepdogs.
Oh no,
they are border collies.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
totally. And you're totally right,
because there is a sheepdog in it. He's when they round up the sheep, they steal the sheep. That dog, that's an Australian cattle dog. I mean, it's a cattle dog. I guess you could split hairs here and say that could be a sheepdog, but I mean, the Wikipedia says those are border collies. So
yeah, but border collies are used for sheepdogs.
Right. I guess the
question is: is sheepdog actually a breed,
or is it just
more of a broader euphemism or a descriptor of dogs that herd sheep?
In the same way that a sheep pig is just a sheep pig.
Right. So Vivian and I actually go to the sheepdog trials every year.
What?
We do at the county fair. We love it. It's because it's fascinating. There's way more to it than they show in this movie about how to, obviously.
I'm sure there is.
Obviously, there's no pig that gets them to walk side by side and go through everything so easily. But there's different ways people do it with either whistles or voice commands and they have to stand in one place just like Cromwell did to get their dog to do these different things until the very end when they put it inside the gate. But it's really great because you can see someone do this and get it done in 6 minutes. You can see someone who at the end of, I can't remember when they call it, like 14 or 15 minutes, that they're frustrated and can't do it. And, but it's fascinating how much work and how well trained these dogs are. And the ones we see, they're almost 100% of them are border collies.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And I just looked up Australian Shepherd, another one, which is like the Aussie, but actually was bred in the United States. They're not Australian. So. Hmm.
Kind of like Outback Steakhouse.
All right, that was a plug. Product placement.
Yeah, we wanted some kickbacks from that one.
Yeah, I'll just sit back and let the money roll in. We got the Outback dollars.
So yeah, the other, I mean, I don't know, I'll throw one more thing in here. I did like this. I enjoyed it. I go on record saying I enjoyed it. But essentially, so first of all, Rex has a nice kind of redemption because he comes around after attacking his spouse and hating this pig for breaking the rules and going, you know, the whole movie he's pissed off. He comes around and helps him at the end. With this crucial phrase that he learns from the sheep, because he goes back to the sheep that Babe knows and learns this crucial phrase and repeat and passes it on, which is essentially cheating. Because, I mean, the pig and or sheep pig, you know, all the they're supposed to herd these animals according to these rules, and really, like, you know, it's a gimmick. Well, it's just cheating. I mean,
yeah,
it's kind of hard to get around that, really.
Yeah.
I think you're being unnecessarily harsh.
I am, but if I don't know if you remember this, Bobby, but I am like this about every single board game and everything I've ever done to the detriment of my own enjoyment and people around me, because I am always like, no, that's not right. And I will look up rules. I'm weird like that, which is why, you know, the game Mafia is so great, because it really has no distinct rules. But so. Not having rules are the rules, so that's why it's okay.
I would agree with you, though. It's a little convenient. It feels a little lazy. You know, the triumph of this pig who wants to be a sheepdog, his victory isn't really a victory as such. I mean, it kind of is, but not because he's such a smart pig or really try, you know, like does a Rudy or something. It's just because someone gave him a password, you know. I don't know. You're right.
Yeah, that he
cheapens
right.
It a little bit.
You're right. He doesn't earn it. He's
right.
Given the secret
right.
Way to communicate with sheep.
He's kind of
you that.
He's like Forrest Gump, kind of, you know, like.
Yeah. But I would not say it's not enough to disqualify him, because he really did cultivate that, because in the beginning it's that he had an unprejudiced heart, and he opens dialogue with the sheep in the first place that
right.
No one has ever done before. So
all right, yeah.
He gets credit for that.
True.
Yeah, it would have been nice if he had been given the word or given, you know, but you're right. That.
Or if it had been introduced true. Earlier as a thing, it just kind of came out of left field, you know?
Yeah.
But I think you're missing the bigger picture.
Yeah, of course I am. I'm sure.
This is a movie about that not, you know, that you could be anyone and become anything. So it's you know, that you could be a little girl in West Virginia and grow up and escape and get
sure.
All the way to the FBI. You know, that's the type of potential that. You know,
that's also the theme of every single children's film there is. You know, be yourself. You can do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I guess.
And motivational
such,
speaker.
And other such bald-faced lies.
That's great.
Yeah, you're going to find us to go through life, you don't amount to jack squat. That'd be a great children's movie.
Yeah. One thing I did find very refreshing about
that's
it, and something,
the, sorry.
And something it has in common with most Pixar movies is that there is a noted absence of any sort of like popular culture references, which is always a shortcut, you know, it's the easy joke, the easy gag, the easy laugh. I always find it irritating in children's movies in particular, for some reason, like animated films, when they just riff on the latest, you know, whatever. It dates it horribly so quickly. And, you know, it's just kind of cheap. And I'm glad that they didn't have any of that.
Right.
You know? And it holds up as a result much better, for sure.
Yeah, you could have thrown in some Charlotte's Web or something, and you know, stuff like that that would that people could relate to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they didn't even use the Sticks song.
Oh no!
Which one?
Babe, I'm leaving. Babe, I love you.
Oh,
sorry, I couldn't help.
You set him up and I knock him down.
Now every time you hear that song, you're going to think of this little pig. Time for a factoid here. There's actually 48 pigs. They grow so quickly that they had to use 48 piglets to make this movie.
That's why? Because they grow so quickly?
Yeah.
I thought maybe they were doubling as...
That must be why they used the little black fur, the hair on the top of his head. So we go, oh, that's the same pig. He's got black hair.
I mean, it's also the only pig.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, and it's not because of the pig work hour rules. So yes,
they're not like kids.
Right. So hey, you want to hear another factoid?
Yes.
U.S. pork sales dropped 20% after this movie came out.
That's great. Like that's,
you know what's awesome that's about amazing. This? It's because this says to me that people who are you know, like PETA, whoever, are saying, like, meat is murder, they should really be having, like, programs that say, meat is your friend. And, you make a pig cute, people don't want to eat it. Like, you show horrible, you know, conditions that a pig grows up in or whatever, and people still eat pigs. I don't know. To me, it wasn't going to change the fact that I'm having bacon at some point soon, but I thought it was amazing that 20% drop. That's crazy.
That is crazy. That's the power of a popular movie, I guess.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars and other awards, which is still surprising. It must have done pretty well then, I would imagine, at the box office.
Yep. It was made for $30 million, and it grossed $245 million.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah. I'm sorry, I just switched those numbers backwards. $254 million it made.
Hmm.
But the second movie stunk. Well, box office-wise, it was made for $90 million and grossed $60
million. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's been $90 million.
I think I've seen some of that, and they end up in a hotel or something. Did anyone else see it?
No, I didn't.
I'm sure Cohen's going to see it.
He saw the sequel first.
Yeah.
I watched it out of order. Now I'm all confused. Like, what the hell's going on? It's like, I don't know if you guys remember that Onion headline from many, many years ago. It said, though I had never seen Major League, I found Major League 2 surprisingly easy to follow.
That movie's on my list as potential see it again.
Yeah. I think that would be. I've seen it a zillion times. I bet.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it probably since the late 80s, early 90s. So I think
I've seen it a couple times since. It's funny.
So pork sales were down, and we talked about Okja. I mean, if that didn't make you not want to eat pig, I don't know what would.
Yeah,
but
totally.
I bring this up because I have recently made a strange decision. I don't know if I've talked about this before with offline, but to stop eating pig because not because of either of these movies or any other. Because
of Pulp Fiction, right?
Because of Pulp Fiction. No, not because of Pulp Fiction either. Because of this pig in South Africa called Pig Casso, who paints with a paintbrush. It's like a 450-pound sow, and this woman saved the pig from a slaughterhouse, and it was such an active pig. She didn't know what to do with it, and she gave it a paintbrush, and, you know, voila, they're selling the art to charity for thousands and thousands of dollars. It's arbitrary as anything else. And I know it's not a good reason, but it was the reason that got me going. Because I knew pigs were smart. I know dolphins are smart. I don't eat dolphin. But, I mean, cow, you know, if a cow learns to read and write, I'll stop eating burgers, I guess.
So,
but that's where I'm at.
Well, while we're getting off topic, I'll tell you that I stopped eating octopus.
Yeah, same reason. No, absolutely.
They're super smart. But the other thing is, like, you know, you say, well, why are you still eating pig? And I said, well, we raise the pig, we do that. Whereas the octopus, we just kind of steal from its home. You know, if we didn't, you know, and this will probably get a whole bunch of people upset, but the fact is, if we didn't raise pigs and cows in farms, they'd probably be extinct because we kill everything else off. But for the octopus, once I heard, it was like, hey, this octopus knows how to escape its tank, go to another tank in the aquarium, eat a fish, and then run back to its tank. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Or like, yeah. That's like way smarter than me as a kid stealing cookies. Like my, I like leave the jar, you know, the lid off the jar or something and get caught. But then this, they had to put up cameras to catch this thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. And squid and cuttlefish and, you know, they're similar. I don't know. I think they're
as squid smart. Are dumb.
Squid are dumb?
Cuttlefish are smart. Squid are dumb.
Oh, cuttlefish are dumb. Okay. Can they all do the same kind of, pattern changing camouflage and stuff, or is that just cuttlefish and octopus?
Yeah, those two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so eat squid.
All right, we're getting really off track here, so let me give you some
but
more,
related, bringing it back around. Apparently James Cromwell became a vegan because of this movie.
Yep, exactly. Nice. Yeah, he said if he was gonna talk about it and promote it, he felt that he would be more understood legit if he was vegan. You know who the Ma, the older you know who she is?
Mm-mm. She sounded familiar.
Her
name's Miriam Flynn, and she is Katherine Johnson. She's the cousin in the married to Randy Quaid in the National Lampoon's Vacation movies.
Mm.
Yeah,
I see her face.
So then Hugo Weaving, we talked about, is Agent Smith. He's also the voice of Megatron, which you guys
know. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously V for Vendetta. But the thing that I learned was that his niece is Samara Weaving, who is the star in Ready or Not, the horror movie from summer. And I think her acting made that movie.
No, I didn't see it. I heard it was good, though.
Yeah, it was decent. But like I said, she puts her heart and soul into that, and she makes it. She's definitely a fun character to watch. The narrator for this movie, Roscoe Lee Brown. He was the narrator, and I don't. Maybe one of you two had this. I definitely had it when I was a kid. That there was a record album called The Story of Star Wars. And it was a bridge version of the Star Wars movie using real dialogue and sound effects. But he was the narrator for it, so that you could listen to Star Wars on a record. That came out in the late 70s.
And I had a cassette tape of the Star Wars that was just the actual movie. It's compressed into 60 minutes, I think, without narration.
What do you mean? Yep.
It was
recorded special for a tape, or it was dubbed onto a tape?
If I dug for it, I might find it. Because it actually said it was not a homemade tape at all. It was a cassette tape. Yeah, I know. It's something I thought I would have dreamt. But I remember it so. Yeah, no, I'm serious. I had the record for Empire Strikes Back, and I remember like the pictures from that and the fold out album thing. But for Star Wars, I actually had on my first cassette player, I would fall asleep listening to that. Hmm. And it's crazy, but true.
All right. Our other things that we talk about, you know, should the movie be remade? There's no need.
Yeah. And
where can you watch it? Everywhere I looked to rent it was $3.99. to stream it or whatever.
Yeah.
But you could actually buy it for that same amount of money and have it delivered to you with no extra shipping off of eBay. So for $4, you could actually own this movie, Cohen, so that your son could watch it over and over.
I was thinking like a rental's fine. so there's no chance of accidentally watching it again. I'm just kidding. I don't know. Yeah.
I saw it on Stars. I've been lucky with, I signed up for Stars, and the last two movies have been on Stars.
I noticed that. I noticed every time I look something up on Real Good, it's like available on Stars or for rental. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. Darn it.
More product placement.
Yep.
I found it interesting that the only line worth quoting was the only line I remembered, which was "That'll do, pig."
Oh yeah, that's the only line I knew before having never seen it. That'll do, pig.
And it's nice that it's bookended. Yeah, that's the first thing he ever says to the pig, and it's the last thing he says in the movie.
I would like to point out that it's a little crazy that he was going to shoot the pig in the friggin' face.
Yeah, that was weird.
Because he thought he spilled a bunch of paint.
No, I thought it was because he thought he killed Ma.
Oh, right. Sorry. Got my scenes mixed up.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
So he thought a baby pig.
Yeah. That,
who doesn't have claws or horns or really, I don't know, pigs have teeth. They must have teeth, but not tear your throat out teeth. I mean, how could you possibly think a little baby pig killed a sheep and even... No, it seemed ludicrous.
Rabbit pig.
And then he grabs his gun, he sticks it right in his face, and the pig's all like, yay. That was sad.
Yeah,
that was a little out of place for the whole
It seems like a little bit of an overreaction.
Well, also kind of jumping to conclusions. I mean, crying out loud that the dog goes and asks the sheep at least. I mean, I don't know what he could have done a little investigating.
I know. He could have sat down and thought about it for 3 minutes and perhaps come up with an alternative scenario.
The movie is 92 minutes, not 94 minutes. Time for that.
Yeah, maybe they actually had a scene where James Cromwell sits on a rock, puts his chin in his hand, and goes, maybe it wasn't the pig. And the studio's like, no. It fucks up the pacing. Cut it. Right.
And alternatively, when they had him questioning the pig, he's like, say what one more time, pig. They cut that out, too.
Yeah. They're like, this sounds familiar.
Hey, do you give this movie credit for having the evacuation complete scene before Austin Powers did?
No,
when he picks up the pig and the pig's peeing, and then he stops. He starts peeing again.
If he had done it twice, maybe, but he only did it once. And his guest went from 16 pounds, 5 ounces to 2 ounces.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
We beat this pig to death? No, that's not.
Yes, I think we have beat this movie to death.
But also, wait, I got a question about that scene. Something remind me. So, doesn't he, when he's writing, when they're doing the weight, right? When he pees, what is he doing? Is he writing it down? Is he telling someone? I don't remember.
He's telling him, and the guy writes it down.
Yeah, whoever guesses the right weight wins the pig.
Right.
Right, but then when did they actually weigh the pig?
They take all the guesses until the next the end of the fair, I believe.
And then do they weigh the pig?
Yeah, then they weigh the pig.
Mm-hmm. So the peeing was just a little gag to get a laugh. It wasn't actually what helped him win.
Right.
Right. Okay. Because I was like, wait a minute. I was watching this. Like, no, they're not going to weigh him till the next day. He's not going to get it right because of the urine. I don't buy it.
That just ruined it for you, huh?
It showed me how disturbing it was.
It ruined it. I was like, oh, come on.
Oh, man, this poor pig. All right, so Sean.
Me?
Wait, I don't know.
Who?
Yes, yeah, Cohen, I think. What are we watching next?
Wait, I think the next one's my pick, isn't it?
Yeah, it's your pick.
Wait, you're asking Sean, but
no,
it's my
pick. No,
I'm asking you. Oh, you switched. I missed that part. We are watching a 80s horror masterpiece called Sleepaway Camp.
Woohoo!
I use masterpiece loosely.
So, because I knew your pick in advance, I said, hey, V, do you want to watch this movie with me? She's like, what is it? And I told her, and she's like, no. She loves horror movies.
Oh, yeah?
And she's like, I don't want to watch a horror movie from the early 1980s.
What?
I'm like, yeah, talk about it. Biased.
That?
I don't know.
When you're biased against 80s horror movies, you're, I don't know. There's got to be a word for that, though. It's terrible. What about all the really good ones?
I don't know. What about
movies like Evil Dead 2 and stuff like that?
She wouldn't watch Nightmare on Elm Street with me either. I had to watch it as prep work for, you know, Freddy Krueger for Halloween. So
but it's so good.
Yeah.
So she never seen Halloween.
Probably not.
No, she's seen them, but she won't go back and watch them again.
Oh.
Well, she's never seen Sleepaway Camp. I mean, I've only seen it one time.
I don't know. There's many people that have seen Sleepaway Camp. To be honest, this might be the most obscure movie we ever review.
No,
or not ever, but I mean so far.
I'm gonna come up with something even more obscure.
Yeah.
Of course you will. We'll have fighting and death.
It's not that obscure. All three of us have seen it.
We saw it together.
But we all saw it together.
Good point.
1986 or something.
So yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Well, I was excited about this review, even though you guys didn't think it was a great movie. I have to say that this is our best review so far.
Best one.
Fantastic.
All right, that's it.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. It's the film with your brains.